Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. And today I have with me your other hostess, Hanako.
Hi.
And your other host, Eric.
Hey.
And today we're going to talk about one short thing, one long thing. The short thing is Rogue One trailer. And then the long thing is we're going to discuss the 100 TV show. Because I think I didn't know a lot of us watched that show, so I thought I was alone in my watching. Come to find out, we all did. So I was like, hey, let's just do a show. I'm caught up on it, weirdly enough. So first, Eric wanted to make sure we talked about Rogue One. I saw the trailer. I didn't care. So Eric, you're going to have to talk about, you're going to have to pump me up for this.
Well, that is an interesting position to take, I think. honestly, because I could expect you to say many things, but not that thing. I don't know. My first, quickest, brief reaction is that while, of course, I was looking forward to this film, I thought it was going to probably be a good movie, or, I mean, it will be, because we still don't know, really know. The trailer was more than I expected. I don't mean that they showed more in the trailer, but I mean, the way it presents the movie, it seems like the movie will be more than I expected. All right, that's my super short take.
Okay. I still don't care. I mean, it just felt like we're watching a video game version of Star Wars with some people we don't know anything about. And then what, Samuel L. Jackson or freaking Forrest Whitaker or somebody's in it.
Whitaker is in it. The only thing, okay, I will say this. I liked it, but I kind of feel like Kat did because I don't read any of the books or I'm not that familiar with the Star Wars universe. Aside from what's already been presented on screen, it's kind of hard for me to get excited because there's no, it's kind of, I guess this is like a spinoff series. So I'm not sure who the characters are, how they fit into the whole Star Wars universe. So I'm not like super, super hyped. I am excited to see it. It looks good. I'm going to be honest. I'm there for Donnie Yen. I just want to see him because you got a Jedi that does Kung Fu. I want to see that. So, yeah. But
hopefully in 2 minutes, I'll be able to patch things over before we get to the main event on this
podcast. I wish you would Eric, don't care.
I feel like many regular listeners of this podcast, just hearing both of your takes,
they've ripped their hair out.
Screaming right now or I know. Punching their phone. Okay, just quickly, I mean, you don't really have to be too, like Hanako just said, she didn't read any of the books. That really shouldn't be necessary, especially because a lot of that old expanded universe stuff is no longer canon in the Star Wars, whatever. And a lot of this stuff should be fresh in this new movie, should be fresh to most people, whether you're up on everything or not. And then part of what was exciting in the trailer was actually characters who we should recognize if we at least know the original movies. Probably one of the most interesting is Mon Mothma, the red haired looking woman who they show. I don't know, did you guys catch her? I found her most interesting because at first I thought she was a CGI face character like Jeff Bridges in Tron Legacy, because I thought, How did they bring her back to life? Like from the set, I mean, looking like herself from A New Hope.
But see, then I noticed that too.
I saw that someone posted a meme about that, saying that Star Wars Rogue One won best throwback Thursday picture, and it was a picture of her from A New Hope, and then the one from the Rogue One trailer.
I didn't quite know what it was or what, but I was like, I recognize her. But I was like, she seemed like she's from the original trilogy, but I can't be sure or whatever. But right. There was a recognition there. So explain, Eric. Sorry.
Actually, she wasn't in New Hope, was she? She was in Return of the Jedi.
No, but, I said the original trilogy.
Oh, no, I know. I messed it up. But actually, I think they took the actress who played a younger version of the character in Revenge of the Sith in the prequels, and I guess they continued to cast that same actress to reprise the role for Rogue One, and she just looks amazingly like the original actress from Return of the Jedi. It's just uncanny. So, and she was like the leader of the rebellion in Return of the Jedi. But anyway, and then you see a character we're not sure who it is. Many think it could be Grand Moff Tarkin, but that's unclear yet. The person, to me, looks like a young Ian McKellen in a white Imperial officer's uniform and a big cape in the trailer. But but prior to this trailer coming out, there was only maybe one or two little photos they had released, which really didn't really give you much idea at all about what the actual movie was going to look like. This trailer gives you a whole bunch to kind of wrap your mind around. And other things people are wondering is, will the seeming protagonist, a lot of people are already wondering if the protagonist in the trailer, could that be Rey's mother? Also, many people have suspected before this trailer that the character we see in the opening of The Force Awakens, the Maxon Vito, the character who gives Poe the plans in the very beginning of the movie, many people wonder if we will see the younger version of him in Rogue One. And many people think that, I don't know, maybe the actor who plays Hannibal might be that same character in Rogue One. So who knows? Who knows? But it looks exciting, and it seems like it'll probably, if maybe loosely, tie to The Force Awakens and what's going on there. And it may tie to the Star Wars Rebels show, which takes place in almost the same time period. So it seems like it may be a nice bridge for all the Star Wars canon that's already out there. But anyway, that's it. I'm just saying it very much exceeded my expectations just as a trailer.
Yeah, I'm not sure why. I feel like if they keep throwing so much Star Wars out that I'm going to get sick of it. Like, I'm starting to get sick of Marvel movies and superheroes and stuff like
what?
That. So, yeah, I am. I'm just really exhausted. I want something different. Like, I need something different. And then it's weird because Star Wars has my criteria for movies, spaceships, and aliens. So, I mean, I don't know. I want to see.
It just depends what comes out.
I want something really new. I want something really new. I don't know. I just want something different, and I don't want something I've already seen before.
Well, in a way, though, from a movie point of view, this should be the most different Star Wars movie yet.
Yeah, but it looks like, what's the second one?
Empire Strikes
Empire.
Back.
It looks like Empire.
Actually, to me, visually, it looks a lot like A New Hope to me. I'm sure that's intentional, but like a modern New Hope.
Well, it feels it felt like everything is taken a place in the bottom barracks of Hoth to me.
Oh, I see that. But I think this one will be different because there should probably be next to no Jedi at all. It's supposed to focus on more like regular lower level characters. It's supposed to be like a team movie,
Thor movie,
I'm trying to think of those famous movies like Guns of the Navarone or Inglourious Bastards, like a team up team movie, or like think like the Marines and Aliens, like, you know what I mean? Like a squad.
Squad goals. Okay.
Yeah. See, so that's part of why it's called Rogue One. And so it's supposed to be like a whole different kind of, you know, instead of like this, all the other Star Wars movies, big picture, the big heroes and villains, this is like targeting in on like a squad level, going on a mission.
Yeah, you know? But it's still.
No, I understand.
Safe. I want something intense. I want something different. I want something gritty. I don't really necessarily need to be dark and depressing, but I want something I can feel. And this just feels like Disney and Star Wars and Disney? Hey, everybody. Let me finish.
There's many ways I would describe it, but
I don't understand that. It just feels like the same. It feels like we've seen it. We're going to expect it. We have to be. It's going to be because you know what I don't want it to feel like and what it's going to start to feel like in a moment. I know I'm pissing you off, listeners. I'm sorry. But it's like how I got sick of Lord of the Rings and I didn't even bother watching the second two Hobbit films. You know what I'm saying? I just could not be bothered because I just got so burnt out. And I'm feeling that right now. And I don't know if it's just I'm having a thing in my life right now and I'm just not in a good place.
I just think it's interesting what you're saying, Kat, because this is only going to be the second film, you know, of Star Wars after.
But I feel like I've been watching Star Wars all of my life. And I made a business on making Jedi clothes. I had to watch the movie so many times to where I know every crease and crevice and stitch of a Jedi costume. I know these movies backwards and forwards, and I've seen them so many times. And it's not that I don't enjoy them. You can put it on right now, and I'll sit down and watch the hell out of it. But at the same time, it's like, ugh, now I got to prepare my mind for a new. I don't know. Maybe I think I'm in a mood. I'm in a mood, people. I'm in a mood.
I think so. But yeah.
Okay, I think I'm in a mood. Just forgive me for right now.
This is gonna be really interesting a year from now, going back to this.
Oh yeah, it is gonna be interesting. I'm gonna totally just prepare my crow, put it in the freezer, just put some Cajun seasoning on it. I'll eat it. But I mean, today I'm in.
In the end, though, it seems like this may actually be a prequel that does things right.
Oh, see, it you very, said prequel, and it, now I'm upset.
I'm just saying, it's weird like that. It seems like this is going to be a good prequel.
Now, Sonny. Okay, well, you know, maybe I have my cranky pants on today. Maybe that's, you know, whatever.
Well, get ready, because I'm about to put mine on.
Oh! That can only mean one thing. That means that Eric is ready to talk about the 100. So, I think I enjoy having both Hanako and Eric on this one because I think that Hanako might speak more. I'm predicting this. I don't know if it's true or not. Hanako might speak more highly of the 100 than Eric. And she might she might be a little bit more forgiving. And I think Eric is going to totally tear it apart, but I'm not really sure what Eric's going to do right now. But he said cranky pants, so I'm excited. I'm super excited.
I don't think we've ever discussed the 100, so we don't even know what the other person actually thinks of the show.
I know that, and number one, I am really, really interested. Would we be really interested to know what Carl thought about this because of the science fiction portion of it, but I don't feel comfortable suggesting it to him because I don't want him to hate me more than he does right now. So but there's certain things in it that I think I want him to see, but then at the same time, I don't want to like him to like come and murder me. So,
yeah. Okay.
So the 100, it is a CW show. It has been on, third season or fourth?
This is the third season.
It feels like four. This thing has been and flying under my radar for three years, and I always wanted to watch it. I know I watched literally 60 seconds of it and turned it off because I wanted to wait because it was out in space and the space looked beautiful. And I was like, Carl, what are you talking about? This is in space. We need to talk about this now. And then Eric was like, well, that's like the only time they're in space. And then I was just like, well, what are you talking? Oh my God, is this Terra Nova all over again? I don't know. And so once he told me that, I was just like, ugh, so fine. I'm not going to bother with it. And then turns out Eric's still watching it. And turns out Hanako is secretly watching it and not telling anybody.
I am secretly watching it. I check into it every time I watch.
So for those of you who are still not convinced about the 100, I took notes. And I just, it's just a short note. And this is what I said. The 100 is like Battlestar Galactica, the reimagined one, Lost, Lord of the Flies, After Earth, Snowpiercer, and Terra Nova. That's what my list says. I have photographic evidence of me writing that stuff down. So,
that's barely the tip of the iceberg.
That is barely the tip of iceberg. So, Eric, proceed. Just proceed with it. I want you to start because I feel like Hanako and I will balance you. And I think maybe Hanako might balance you out more than I.
Well, again, I'll try to go with the short version because it can get long, maybe. But, okay, I have a severe love-hate relationship with this show. And there's a few other shows out there, some that we've talked about before and some we haven't, that I also have this love-hate relationship. And I hate that because I would rather love a show or hate it or like it, but not love-hate. That is like a really bad middle ground, I think.
How, Eric, how pray tell can you love/hate something?
Because this show... Okay, there's a lot of shows out there that we've watched and things. When I get invested into a show up to a point, like watching a certain amount, at times I can find it very difficult to quit a show, even if I don't like it, really. And going back to season one of this show, by the second, third, fourth episode, I thought, okay, this is really not for me. It really isn't. But I don't know why... I just let it continue. I shouldn't have.
So did you? Was it an initial binge watch, or did you watch it week to week?
Actually, I heard season two coming soon, and I thought, oh, I'll check out season one, and if I like it, then I'll watch season two weekly. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what happened.
Okay.
And so I started watching season one, and first episode I was sort of in, but again, moving towards through season one, it quickly started becoming to me like, no, I really shouldn't like this. Like, I'm not the target demographic. I'm not gonna like this. This is not gonna go well. And I should have quit, like maybe by episode six, but I just continued to go and just let's see.
And I mean, you haven't told anybody. Like, this is somebody, this is our listeners listening to you to try to tell them why they should or should not listen.
Well, I'll
to this.
Get to
we need
that,
to okay, okay.
I'm trying to say why I had this love-hate relationship.
Okay, okay.
Because I stuck it out till the end of season one. And when they sort of like have their twist or whatever at the end, I have to admit, I was like, okay, I didn't, you know, I really didn't expect that at all. And so it kind of pulled me back in with the finale and wanting to see what happens in season two. And I'm trying to make this short, but, and as we know in season two, they really reinvent the show, the storyline, and do a lot of things. And that made me think, oh, maybe I was wrong about this show. Maybe this really, this is just the beginning and there's so much more to offer. And so then I watched all season two on a weekly basis, more or less. And it sort of did the same. Well, it hooked me in for a while. Then it started getting ridiculous again. And then towards the end of season two, I had the same crisis of, okay, I'm going to quit. I kept saying, I'm going to quit. Like, this is going to be my last episode. No, this is going to be my last. And by the time season two was finished, I thought, I'm done. I am not even going to mess with season three. Like, I'm so out of this game. And then I watched the first episode of season three, Big Mistake. Because, again, I was shocked that it seemed good, the beginning of season three. And then fast forward, here we are today. So I am pissed because I keep trying to quit this show. And it's very difficult for me because I'm like a junkie who doesn't know what's good for him. And right when I'm about to get out and wipe my hands, and they pull me back in.
Oh, my God.
And I read it yet again, because if you're currently caught up with the show, it's another shitstorm. And I only can blame myself for this. There's no one else at fault. And so this is why I flipping hate this show. Because rarely can I think of another show where I started to detest it so much, but that it where it came back from that. See, that's the difference. You know, unlike Heroes that and Heroes Reborn that just destroyed itself the world over, this show somehow, it's like your ex, it like comes back. And you know you should be done with this chapter of your life. She sits back in your bed. You don't expect it. And you feel something warm next to you and you don't know what it is.
Oh my God.
You're appalled because you really need to move on in your life. You really do.
I don't even know
what is happening right now. We have not even talked about the prince.
Wow, that was like the longest I hate this show, but I don't hate it ever.
Wow. I don't know how to hate love something. Either I'm like mediocre or whatever. So, all right, if you've made it this far and you have not watched The 100, it is post-apocalyptic drama television series, and it follows a group of teens, Clark, Bellamy, Octavio. So what it is they destroyed the Earth's atmosphere. It was a nuke or something like that. The nuke made the Earth inhabitable, so they lived up in a spaceship, and then the spaceship... or the space station or whatever. Then the living conditions were, they couldn't, it was becoming a place where they couldn't sustain it. So they had harsh rules and they had to eliminate people. This is how I say it was like Snowpiercer, because they only had enough room for a certain amount of people. And then they had to purge every once in a while. So all they were really like, they're really strict. And if you do one thing, out the airlock you go. And this is because they like were not going back to the Earth or whatever. So they have a lot of people in prison, or they have this thing where if you're a kid, you can make as many infractions as you want. You won't get you can go to jail, but they won't put you out the airlock until you turn 18. But they had so many kids in prison that they were like, you know what? Screw it. Let's just send them down to the Earth and see if they'll live and see if the Earth is habitable, you know. And then so they go down to Earth. And so this is how it's in space, but not in space. And they go down to Earth and they're like the CW teens that you expect. They're all attractive. You remember that show, Revolution with, yes. Everybody, it was post-apocalypse, but everybody looked a little too clean. And
TV show.
Everybody was just a little too clean. And he was just like, I don't know about this. This is painful. But that's kind of how they are. And then, like, nobody, like, there was no stash of, like, fabric or... Okay, no, I'm not going to go into the clothing. But the thing is that they're on Earth. And what it's different, like, now for how it's like after Earth is that they go down to the Earth to see if it's, like, a dead zone or whatever. It's not. But instead of using the spaceship or any of their space tools, they got to forge and rough it. And so how it begins to be, like, lost, they have this smoke situation that comes. It's not a black smoke monster, it's yellow smoke, and it's not a monster. It's like coming from somewhere. They don't know where it's coming from. They got to fend for the life. Blah, blah, blah. There's people on the Earth that's been surviving on the Earth, a nuked Earth, because they've adapted all this time and they landed in their territory. So there's a territory war. Then it kind of is like Pocahontas and like the Americans or something, because there's a chick that goes over to the tribe and then she learns their ways. And then there's this one guy who is Lincoln, and he's like one of them, and they kind of like cross over. I don't know. But then there's in space, they're still in space, and they lost contact with the kids on Earth. So the kids are like kidding around and killing each other and getting really weird. And they're doing all these adult things that kids should not be doing. And it looks a little weird because it's not really believable. And they're the freaking star of the show, Clark, she knows how to do every freaking thing. Everything, anything that needs, she knows how to lead. She knows how to like do electronics. She knew how to operate. She knew how like strategies and chess. And she just knew so much in the first season that I got sick of her. Anybody else feel any of that? Anyway.
I almost forgot about
it. Yeah, I remember. They kind of backed away from that.
I remember now that you bring it up. But, I mean, I'll let you continue. But that's part of what I don't like about this show, too, is that characters are extremely inconsistent. If you look at them as a whole, like if you choose any one character and follow their storyline,
oh Lord, let's not.
Whenever they came out to where they are now, it's like they swap personalities the way a normal person would swap clothes. That is
though. But here's the other thing that really got me. So they're on the spaceship with all this technology that they could do anything with. And it is not until they get to Earth that they are really crafty and can put shit together. You know what I'm saying? Like they got together like a smokehouse where they like had meats and they knew how to like hang meat and all this other type of stuff. They knew how to make electronic signals. They could do all of these really highly skilled technical things, but somehow just could not keep the spaceship going. And it's only one chick that knew how to do that. And then like, for some reason she was something wrong with her leg. And then there was a drug and it's nothing wrong with her leg now, but I don't know. That's second season.
That's actually third season.
That's third season. Yeah. Goddamn it. And no, then like not
second season, you're talking about Raven. The smoked meat people, that's actually one of the grounder.
No, they learned how to do it in their thing, but it burned down because one of the kids wasn't watching it right. You know what I'm saying? They was putting too much wood on the fire and it burned down and everyone got mad because they didn't have any more meat. It was a stupid episode.
Yeah, I forgot about that a little bit.
Yeah. This is all fresh to me because I like watched it like literally maybe 2 weeks ago. So, so that's just like, and then there's the people in the sky and they're still up in the spaceship station and they're doing this thing where they're running out of oxygen or the ship's going to fall. I mean, the space station's going to fall apart and, you know, they got to somehow figure out how to get to the ground and then there's no way. And then somebody remembers some extra pod or something. And then so they rough it and then they.
No, don't forget about the mutiny. There was a mutiny.
Oh, there was a mutiny because
when is there not a mutiny?
Yeah, right. There was a mutiny because they needed to purge people. So in order to survive for the next whatever, because they didn't know how long they were going to live. So they like 20 people volunteered to be purged. And then the next day they figured out, just kidding. We can really go to Earth if we do this thing. And then people were like, fuck that, blah. Why didn't you think of this before? Maybe something like that. But then Ellen Ty came on, led the mutiny. She's dead somehow, right? Ellen Ty from freaking Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, that was her.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure what that did because she was on for so fast and left so quick that I was just like, okay, all right, we're done with that. And so eventually the old people come to Earth and they set up at the
They come to Earth and they pretty much take over. Like they know what's going on down on the ground and they quickly start to screw everything up.
Because they think they have a superior firepower. But that's not, I don't want to leave the space station just yet. One of the things about the space station that really got me was that everybody, they have like a chancellor system and they vote and different representatives and there's a chancellor. However, there's one chancellor, then there's somebody who else wants to be a chancellor, and then there's somebody on the board of the whatever. And all of these people are vying to do, vying for, I don't know, not power, but the right way to do something. And then for some reason, for like maybe 10 episodes straight, they have a self-sacrifice off. Like everybody, for whatever reason or another, felt like they needed to die to be the hero. And it was just like, Jaha. He wanted to sacrifice himself. And then that other guy wanted to sacrifice himself. And then the mom wanted to sacrifice herself. But then somebody else was like, oh, I'm going to sacrifice myself to get people to the ground. And he didn't have to sacrifice himself because somebody sacrificed themselves before he could sacrifice himself. And I was just like, oh my God, what is happening right now? Why is all this self crazy self-sacrifice, and it was just like a big, huge thing.
I just want you to know your description is just giving me life right now.
Giving you life?
But I'm serious. This is
my life.
But this is, Eric, this is exactly how, I mean, like, really, I'm not that far off. Like, I'm not an eloquent description person of shows, but, or speech at all, it appears. But this is pretty much how the show feels. It feels exactly like this, like a crackhead, if I were.
No, back. I agree, but how is this giving Hanako life?
Because it's hilarious.
Hilarious to me.
Because how the show, it definitely goes that way. And then so after everybody gets to the ground, Jaha stays on the space station because he sacrificed himself. He won the self-sacrifice off. And everybody else got to the ground. He stayed on board and they did some stuff. And like Hanako said, they got on the ground. They start trying to have fight with the tree crew, and they have their own little language, which is really kind of, I like their little language though. But then there's like not only a tree crew, but then there's like a bunker people, some bunker people, and then Jaha has some sort of vision of a baby. Somebody left a baby behind, but it wasn't really a baby. It was his son's spirit guiding him to Earth so he could be on Earth as well. And then I'm tired. Would somebody take over? Shit.
Papa, you talk for a bit because I'm getting riled up over here. But you say your piece.
What else? Like some other stuff happened, Hanako.
Why are you getting riled up, Eric?
Because it's starting to remind me and make it clear why I don't like this show. But you speak first.
Oh my goodness. I don't even know where to begin after all that. Needless to say, I don't have the feelings of animosity towards the show, as you know, it's been previously stated. I do have some issues with the show. I actually got into the show, if I'm not mistaken, right before season two. My daughter had been bugging me to watch this show. She started watching it and loved it. And I kind of was on the fence about watching it because I just didn't know if I felt like getting into something else that was kind of sort of dystopian, post-apocalyptic thing. Sitting at home over the summer, bored, I decided to go ahead and watch it. I watched the first few episodes. I wasn't so... generally with me, with most shows, if it doesn't grab me by the first episode, I'm kind of hit or miss with it, but I'll usually give a show at least 4 or 5 episodes because I know that sometimes it takes just that long to kind of establish the world and establish the characters and who these people are and what they're doing and stuff. So I did, and I ended up binge watching the whole first season. I enjoyed it. It wasn't like one of my favorite shows, but I, you know, it was okay for what it was. It was interesting enough for me to watch the second season. So I think at that point, the second season was maybe halfway through. So I binge watched the second season and, you know, finished up. And then I think this season is the first season that I've actually been able to watch it from the beginning. And it's been kind of hit or miss for me. I think the overall story that they're trying to tell was kind of ambitious to begin with. To make things a little bit clearer, basically this is post-apocalyptic, post-nuclear war-torn Earth, right before this nuclear bomb, which we find out was released by an AI, an artificial intelligence being. The Earthlings were sent up to space and they survived up there for 97 years. And as Kat said, what they started doing was, they started losing oxygen. They started losing, the space station was basically falling apart. It was deteriorating. It was becoming uninhabitable. So they sent a group of kids down to the surface to see if the Earth was...
I did this already. You got to pick up in season 2.
I think it's a little bit clearer.
Okay, fine.
And from that point, we start kind of fleshing out the characters and seeing what they're about. For me, the thing that keeps me with the show are the characters. And it's not necessarily because all of the characters are great or because they're written well. But I have an equal love-hate relationship with most of the characters on the show. I think there are very few on the show that I actually like completely. And I think maybe Octavia and Lincoln were two of those characters, because I think those two characters, I think they've stayed truest to who they are from the beginning of the show, from when we meet them to now. All of the other characters, they have been going through some major personality changes, which I don't particularly care about.
Yeah.
Clark is making a lot of questionable decisions, and she's just kind of, I don't think she's thinking in her right mind, and some of the decisions that she's made have, you know, just kind of made me weary. I'm kind of like, okay, this does not need to be the person who all of this stuff is depending on. Bellamy is getting on my nerves because he's blindly following someone who has basically led him into being a mass murderer, led him into betraying his friends, his sister, and the Bellamy from a couple of seasons ago would not have done that. Some of the other characters I just outright hate. I really wish someone would take a Pike into Colonel Pike's head. That character is one of the, from the moment he stepped on the screen, I've not liked his character still. Well, love the character to just, yeah, I really want to see Indira do something with him.
You mean Lady May?
Yes, Lady May. I thought about you the first time I saw that show. When I looked, I said, oh my God, it's Lady May. But she is so good in this role. She's so, you know, she's mean and she's a warrior.
But
and
she's fair playful.
And so I like seeing her in this role. But yeah, I can't even say at this point what it is about the 100 that just keeps me coming back. It's not necessarily, like I said, I don't think it's a bad show. I think it's good, and I see what they're trying to do with the show. I just think they're dawdling too much with certain things, with certain aspects of the storyline. This whole City of Light storyline with the AI person, it's really starting to get on my nerves.
And then go ahead.
Yeah, because Jasper and his anger are starting to get on my nerves. It's like, dude, get over it already. It was either your friends die or your girlfriend dies.
He's going on a little too long with that.
Yeah, but you know what? When that's the only romantic interest you've probably had ever, I can understand that. But yeah, he's taking it a bit far. And just some of the other, I don't know, some of the other characters, we've got some good characters on there. We've got some strong characters on there. I would like to see them doing a little bit more. But I don't know. We'll see. We just had two major dates.
Oh, boy.
So, in the last couple of weeks, two very controversial deaths, fan-wise. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm kind of... I want to see where they're going to push the show to, because I think they spent too much time on Clark and Lexa debating, trying to form this truce that didn't work out, and now Clark is basically looking for someone to step up and be the new commander of the tree crew, or to be the new commander of all the clans. So I don't know. I mean, I don't hate the show. I will sit down and watch it, and I like it. But I think it needs a little bit more. I don't know. It's just, it's one of the, I guess it's one of those shows. I enjoy watching it, but I don't have a specific reason why. It's just something that has pretty much sucked me in. I guess that's the best way to.
Wow. Hanako is really not going to balance this seesaw. I've got plenty more in the tank.
I don't hate it. Okay. I don't hate it. I actually like watching it. And like I said, I like some of the characters. I like what they're doing with some of the people. And I like some aspects of the storyline. I do like the fact that as a society, one of the big things about this show is the fact that they do portray LGBT relationships with almost no afterthought. There's shows. No. And I know what you're laughing at, but I mean, with most shows, it's like when you see a gay or lesbian relationship, there always has to be some kind of like preface to it to kind of get people, I guess, prepared for what they're going to see on screen. And this show, I feel like they just kind of introduced Clark's bisexuality with no fanfare, with no, you know,
I felt like it was another inconsistency, but whatever.
See, I don't, because see, we saw this all the way back in the first season where, you know, you could kind of tell she had an attraction to Lexa when she's first introduced. You could kind of see a little bit of a spark there. But I feel like it wasn't one of those things that was just automatically just kind of thrown into our face, or it wasn't one of those things that was kind of had to be explained. It's like, for at least for me watching it, Clark's bisexuality was just something that just always was. And it, the way that they kind of brought it on screen, it was just kind of like no big deal, which I think it should be for, you know, the way that
I found Michonne and Rick more believable when that happened than this. I'm just saying.
I mean, that couple. But anyway, I didn't have any issues. Like, okay, she started out for season one falling for Finn, and then towards the, I guess it was end of season one, beginning of season two, because that's when we were really introduced to the Grounders more. When Lexa was brought in and they were kind of getting to know each other and Lexa made that play for her, it was kind of like, it didn't seem out of place to me. I don't know, maybe I was reading too much into it, but it just didn't seem out of place to me. And then just the kind of development of her and Lexa's friendship and relationship, even going through the drama that they went through when Lexa betrayed her, it never felt forced to me.
You are alone in that assessment, but yes.
You are very alone.
I will tell you what seemed forced to me. The relationship on there, the relationship between Brian and Miller, the gay couple on the screen,
that seems forced. Yeah, that is over forced.
That to me felt forced. It didn't seem like, you see some gay relationships, especially with younger gay characters on TV, that seemed more natural. This one feels like really, really forced. Like, I just don't, and I guess it's just, I'm one of those people about, you know, chemistry. I don't feel any chemistry with those two characters. So it just doesn't seem like something that would, like, I would see Monty and Jasper Miller.
Whatever.
Yeah. Are you ready for round two?
I guess so. What do you have to say? Hanako's been very, very gracious and very generous.
Yes, I say generous.
But she gave a gracious description of the show. So I think, yeah, I want to hear what you have to say, Eric. And I guess we should strap in.
One thing I find interesting, all right, when you choose to watch this show on Hulu and other CW shows, I find it interesting. The very first thing that comes up on your screen is like this little CW thing that splashes on screen, and it says "Defy Your World." And I think that's very fitting, because the only way you can accept this show is if you defy your world and how things actually work and happen. It's an interesting opener, I think, when getting to the show, because this is what I find most troubling in general. I was thinking about it the whole time listening to you, Kat, speak, and then Hanako speak, because this show is all over the place. In a way, I have to choose my words properly, but it's almost as if this show is, if you took a bunch of fan fiction and decided to throw hundreds of thousands of dollars at it to produce it and make it really, really pretty, like, what would you get? And not just fan fiction, I'm not trying to slight fan fiction, but also fan fiction made from a committee. To think about this show, for those who have never seen it and don't intend to, it almost reminds you of that exercise in creative writing where, like, someone starts writing on the paper for 5 minutes, and then you hand it off to somebody else, and they take the story from there, and then you hand it off to somebody else, and it just keeps happening. And that's how I feel about this show. It doesn't seem like a single person or two are really in control of this thing. And also, you reminded me, see, part of the reason why I was very dubious about this show from the onset was that in the very beginning, when the show first came out, season one, it seemed like it was trying to cash in on Hunger Games, like, popularity.
Yeah.
They really tried to sell it as, this is like Hunger Games on the small screen. And it very much actually seems like that. And perhaps the first...
It seemed like that other one, the Divergent.
It's like that too, for sure.
I would say both of those are more Divergent than Hunger Games. Yeah.
No, well, but Hunger Games, because they tried to emphasize this like survival aspect, like Lost, but this is like Lost with adolescents or teens. That's how they started it, all right? But as mentioned, it turns into many other things, because... Yes, it does draw from the 2003 Battlestar Galactica. But then in season two, they take this whole Mad Max turn into the sand. And then when you have the people under the mountain, if not, depends who you are, but not many people remember like the later sequels of the 70s Battle of the Apes movies. But especially when you get to Beneath the Planet of the Apes and Conquest for the Battle of the Apes and all it. It's like whoever made this show is like a fan of all these interesting pre-existing franchises in the sci-fi universe. And coming into this really strange gumbo.
Right. I agree with you on that. And I also think that they're trying to please too many people. I mean, especially with the thing where they keep having that one character say, game over, man, game over. And like, what? Do you remember that?
I don't, but just hearing that
they keep having this one guy randomly say that every time. And I feel like they just, like you said, is a weird gumbo. They're trying to take everything that everyone likes and try to make it appeal to everyone. And I think that's why we get sucked in, because it has just enough of some things that we like and it goes off to something else. And it has just enough things that everybody likes that it's able to keep you coming back.
And then, so continue. And now currently in season three, it's like they said, all right, this year, everybody, here's the theme, Game of Thrones. Like, because it's kind of interesting, but then it's kind of, where did this all come from? Like, all this stuff they're introducing. And, oh, my God. Oh, how long is this show? Because I'm starting to get worked up. Because there's just too many things I feel like I have
to address.
Just
keep on. Keep at it.
Okay. Now, getting into season three. With this, I don't know, capital city for the Grounders or whatever. I have many issues. A simple issue is just that they always show that single skyscraper tower. I guess like where their throne room is, their iron throne. And I honest, this is the thing I think isn't every like time, the and they show it a lot. Shadow
or something.
The what?
I said, was it like the Sky Needle or something like that? Or
no, no, it's not that. Well, because they're definitely on the East Coast, but it also it isn't like a needle type building. It's more like a cylindrical standard like high rise building, but they show it prominently all the time, like for establishing shots in season three. Mm-hmm. Every time I see it, I always think, if this was real, like if this was a real world, like I always picture the characters going up and down 60 flights of stairs. Like, don't you think about that? Yeah. That's the worst thing. If you've ever been in an office building when like there's like a fire drill and the elevators are out or they're under construction, it's murder. Is absolute murder.
No, they have an elevator that they use. They crank it like the like.
Oh, do they?
They do. I don't either.
They have an elevator, but it works just like the the little boys in Mad Max Fury Road. They manually.
I understand. I don't remember seeing that though in the show, so maybe that would have helped.
They showed it like that when Bellamy and the crew tried to break in because they thought that they were going to be attacked there, and it turns out that the grounders were attacking Mount Weather.
Yeah,
you remember they set up in Mount Weather to use the medical facilities,
right?
And the one grounder that Bellamy had helped last season, she came and told them, I think there's going to be an attack. And she led them to the building, and there was somebody there who was supposed to be working the elevator, and they attacked that person so that they could get access.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
that's fine.
Another thing. So we've had a bunch of these throne room scenes, and we like been introduced to these other leaders of the grounder culture, and they're getting really lofty like in some of their exchanges that they were having, like when they were negotiating and all this tribe business. And another thing I found disturbing was it appears that virtually every grounder, and not just the royalty but even lower level ones, like they all speak English, standard English. And not only do they speak standard English, sometimes they speak better English than the people from the Sky crew. And it bothers me to no end, because all speak English. I know this may sound unimportant, but if they all speak English so well, then why do they even have a native language?
No. I agree with you.
Like, it's absurd. Like, why do they even do that? Because it sounds like their grounder language is like, those are their second and third languages, like not their first languages. It bothers me to no end. But, oh my gosh. Yeah, almost every character is extremely inconsistent. I guess can we fast forward to what's happening?
Go ahead.
I mean, where we are in the show. Is Pike's thing that he's simply just crazy? I mean, but he's not even believable crazy. I mean, Governor is believable crazy, psychotic, whatever. But Pike, from the beginning, like his storyline in season three, that strategy made sense?
No.
That's what I was saying. From the moment he stepped on the screen, it's like, why are you even here?
When in the history of anything, fictional or not, has anyone decided to massacre like their allies? Like, when you have a bigger threat out there, can anyone come up with an example in fiction or in real life where you massacre your biggest ally? Because that seems to be a winning strategy.
I can't.
I got nothing.
I told you that character, he's probably the character I hate the most on the show. Because he hasn't made sense from the moment he set foot on the screen. Like, nothing that has come out of his mouth or none of it. Now, I won't even say that, because I can understand where he might be coming from, considering his first experience on the ground with grounders was the grounders snatching their people and killing them. So I can kind of understand his hostility. But once the leader of the clan tells you, I am sending 300 warriors to protect you, and these people have done nothing but do that, for him to go and sneak, not only just attack and kill, you did it like a coward under the darkness of night while they were sleeping. That's the most cowardly act you can do. And then everybody's supposed to follow you like, yeah, he's a hero. He's what we need. No.
Yeah. For people who hopefully will never watch, by the way, they always, I just noticed this in promos, they emphasize, they call the show The 100, mm-hmm. and it even points that out on the internet, because I always think of it as The 100 myself, but anyway, it's The 100. But anyway, for people who I hope will never watch this show, think of it this way with the current storyline in the Walking Dead series. It'd be like if Rick like went to Hilltop and, you know, discovered it and what they were all about, and then Hilltop tells Rick about the saviors, all right? And then Rick thinks about it for a little while, and then he massacres the Hilltop. Like, that is how unbelievable season 3 of the... Am I accurate? Am I right? Is that what happened?
I mean, it just... Yeah. And you know what's funny is that I was paying so much... I was not paying so much attention to the show that I didn't even realize how stupid that was. Like, I was just like... It was just washing over me at one point, because I was like, so why are these people dead? Because people keep dying, and mass amounts of people just keep dying. And I just was like, okay, whatever. And so I didn't really realize how ridiculous it was until we just started talking about it now, because everything on the show is ridiculous. So I don't know.
There is a lot of ridiculous. Okay, for a moment, I'm going to take a breath and say some positive things, but cut this out of the podcast.
Shut up.
Shockingly, and even though this show is very apparently shot in Vancouver and British Columbia.
Really?
I couldn't tell. Yeah, I know. But despite that obviousness, it still is a very good-looking show, especially in season 2 and season 3, more than season 1. It actually is really good-looking. The effects are actually quite top-notch. I don't even know what to say. They go above and beyond in that department, and this is part of what makes this show so troubling. What was the other thing? I have to admit, at least up to this point, I actually find the expanding of the story with the AI business and the that episode that went back into the past not too long ago.
Yeah.
I actually thought that was a good episode, and that was interesting, and that actually added to the show something.
Yeah,
for once, rather than take away. It also reminds me of the early days of when I was on Sci-Fi Party Line, because that actress who's from Eureka.
I know.
It reminds me of one of the first SFPLs I was ever on, when you guys would talk about Eureka, and I was like, I don't really know about that show, but I like that deputy.
Lupo.
Yeah, so I remember that, but so that is interesting. But here's the thing, though. I had to look a little bit, because of course this show is based on some pre-existing novels, right? Or I don't know if they're young adult or not, but of course they are, because that's been the trend for the last decade. But see, because of that, though, that's part of the reason why I kind of stuck it out with this show, because if it was made out of thin air, I would have thought in season 1, all right, this cannot be good, because they don't seem like they have any original ideas. But when they did the Underhill storyline and then the Mad Max desert, I thought, oh, this is so interesting, because, see, they have a plan. They have a guide map, you know, like Walking Dead has the comics. So I thought, things may seem messy now, but they have a roadmap with these books already existing. So they should kind of know where they're going, right? I mean, that's what I'm thinking. But I just did some mini research before we started talking. And it seems like the novels, yes, the show was kind of true to them, but the novels only covered like what the events of season one and then really the events of season two with dealing with the people under the mountain. But then that's kind of it, though, because I believe it's just a trilogy. So yes, it seems like the show in season three has already begun to go beyond the pre-existing novels. So now I'm getting scared. Because you told me this was like a series of six or seven novels, I'm thinking, oh, we still, you know, there's still much more. No, it seems like now they're in made-up territory. So, and like, it doesn't seem like the AI business or the Game of Thrones council business, it doesn't seem like that was in the novels. So now it feels like we're out on our own to me. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. Who knows what to expect?
You know what I find funny is that this is a show that by, I don't know, I feel like this is a show that we should not take seriously at all, that we should not be watching, that we should not be caring about, and that it should have been canceled already. You know, I just feel like the fact that we have dedicated a show to an episode of Sci-Fi Party Line to it, and we're discussing it with some, like, we've actually paid attention to the things that are happening. It's bizarre to me. There are so many things on TV to watch. And how are we watching this? How are other people watching this, thinking that this is a really great show? And how are we watching it, dissing it, but enjoying it at the same time? Because that is the definition of love, hate. And what does it do? And why are we it's such a popular show with people that there's fan outrage at a death that is newsworthy enough that it surrounds like all the news outlets. And so it's fascinating to me that something that, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit garbage, is the hot ticket right now. And I feel like it's not the hot ticket because it's not supposed to be, but then again, it's the weird Drake of sci-fi right Drake. Now or something. I don't know, the weird, like, why are you, what now? Yeah, I don't get it.
It's, if ever there was a Trojan horse of a show, I swear this is it. It, because, oh my goodness. Because, like, you're kind of right, but then at the same time, I mean, it makes sense to me why you and I, Kat, should not be watching this. but for the, like, people at large, it makes sense to me that this is as popular as it is. Like, and it's crazy. Like, if you Google, like, news on The 100, the series, like, there's a lot of articles that are titled things like, this is the successor to Battlestar Galactica. Or if you've been looking for, like, cutting-edge sci-fi on TV, look no further.
And, really? That's what they're saying?
That's the headlines I see when I just do a broad Google search.
Wait, what'd you say,
if
Hanukkah?
You ignore the stuff about the current behind-the-scenes drama on the show, if you look past that stuff,
I was gonna say, in the last couple of months, I've actually seen a couple of articles that I haven't read, but one of the articles said, it was basically talking about why the 100 is one of the best shows on TV you're not watching.
Yes.
And then another article, the one that I'm looking at now, says how the 100 quietly became the CW's best show. Yes. No, ma'am, that's still Supernatural. But yeah, so apparently, I mean, there's a lot of I guess you could say critical, not necessarily acclaim, but I've seen more positive reviews about this show.
So weird.
But also, okay, another thing I try to do when I watch these types of shows, or especially CW, since apparently I watch almost everything on the network, which I think that's actually how I got into this, is because I watched all the CW superhero shows. And actually, I think it was because of seeing promos for this while watching those other shows. That's why I drifted into the 100. But anyway, like, when I try to take these shows in, because if we ever do a serious podcast on, like, Arrow and Flash, I will have many similar complaints as I have already with this show. But I try to put my mind into that of a millennial and like try to see these shows through millennial eyes. And see, if you had never really seen or experienced a lot of the things referenced, like Mad Max and the old school Battle of the Apes and the Battlestar Galactica, and you're coming into this with a relatively fresh mind, and maybe you never really saw Lost either, or maybe you did when you were a kid, but I guess if you're like a blank slate in that way, this show like introduces a lot of concepts to you that on television you're like, I've never seen anything like this. Yes, there's been post-apocalyptic and other survivors, but again, this show pushes the envelope with look and style. So it kind of like glosses, it tricks your mind. And you think you're seeing something like really high quality. Like with the sound off, you almost think you're watching an HBO show. You might think, but if you actually study the characters and the mechanics of the writing and the contrivances, that's where it really breaks down. But I don't know. Do millennials listen to this podcast? I don't know. I'm not trying to slight anybody and say like, oh, we're in our ivory tower of having watched TV forever. But if you have watched a lot of TV, it can be difficult to reconcile this. Like, yeah, somehow if we're going to continue to watch this, I'm just speaking for us individually, you do have to shut off your brain. And I am able to do that with some shows that I watch, that I just watch them because I don't care. It's kind of goofy. It's kind of funny. But The 100, it occupies this weird in-between area. I don't know. And also, by the way, kind of like some of the ways Hanako was talking about the show in a good light earlier, kind of like saying some of his relationships worked well, and maybe she said like they presented LGBT things like it was just no big deal. I know you guys haven't seen it, but you were reminding me of a show that's on right now that I think does all these things, targets the same demographic, but is so much more better done. The Magicians, I would say, would almost be targeting the same audience as this show, except I think The Magician's show is much more competent at dealing with all these things, like dealing with its characters, dealing with consistency, dealing with like a storyline that makes coherent sense, like character motivations stay true to the universe in which they exist. Like, that's the only thing that bothers me, that people who watch The 100 and really like it, I feel like should be watching The Magicians instead.
Hanako, do you watch The Magicians?
I have not started yet, and I decided because I've got so much going on TV-wise, I'm going to wait until the season ends, and then I'm just going to binge watch it. Because every time I sit down and try to watch it, something else comes up, and then I end up going to my default show. So, yeah, I'm going to get to it.
It's obviously not a sci-fi show strictly, but it's definitely a genre show, so to speak. But I just think that people who might enjoy this show because of the characters and how they interact, and again, this is, you know, it is like a CW audience. I just think The Magicians is a better show for that demographic. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Call me crazy.
Yeah, you're crazy, but
okay,
we love you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, so speaking about Clark, and they tried to drop seeds of her being bisexual, or the possibility of her being sexual. It wasn't out of the blue. Like, some chick, she was somewhere and some chick kissed her, and she was just like, I'm not ready for another relationship. And she didn't.
That was Lexa.
Was it?
Yeah, that was Lexa. But see,
I thought it was another chick that did it first.
No, that was Lexa. That was all. Yeah, that. But see, that was right.
But you're saying after Lexa and Clark, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lexa and Clark.
Yeah, I remember that.
This was right after Clark had to kill Finn. So at that point, she wasn't ready for a relationship, because that was still kind of going on, and she was still facing all of the repercussions from the decision she made to kill.
But didn't she sleep with the shopkeeper or something?
Yeah, but that was this season.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway,
and that was before she got reacquainted with Lexa. She was still on the run at that time.
Yeah. So my thing with Clark and her bisexuality is that it feels like it's a thing that's there for like young teenage boys to wank off to. It doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel.
I somewhat agree with that.
Yeah, it doesn't feel. I've seen lesbians in love on TV that is just more believable. It feels more authentic. It feels richer, and it just because it's something else. Now there's a thing to the Lexa Clark relationship it has a complication to it. There feels like they wrote tension in. They wrote the history behind it. We can see how logically that this is supposed to happen, but I don't feel it, man. It still feels forced. And I don't know why they killed her off so unceremoniously. It was just problematic, the whole everything. And I don't.
I think we can explore this a little bit more, but also let us also address the other big departure that just happened. And because I'm sure if anyone is listening who does like the show, huh?
I said Lincoln.
Yes, but not only within the context of the show, but also with what they are saying like behind the scenes with that situation.
You mean about he's saying he was bullied off of the show?
Right, right.
Yeah. What about it?
Well, okay. This is about it. Because, I don't know, with whatever show it is, I often try not to read into these types of situations.
Yeah.
When they happen, generally. Because yeah. You never really know, because it's like he said, she said.
Yeah.
But that said, like, you would think the actor must have felt really, really strongly about this
to
a public statement. You would think. And it doesn't necessarily mean his side of the story is the way it is. You know, it could be both of them were involved, meaning the showrunner and him butted heads, or maybe it was more one or the other. I don't know, but I don't know who started the fire, but there was definitely smoke, and it makes you wonder about it. It really does.
Well, it felt really weird because he feels like one of the strongest actors on the show, and I actually kept watching because of him because I thought he was hot and he kept taking his shirt off.
And I didn't think he was hot, but I actually thought that he was one of the more possibly most interesting characters
on
the
show
almost the whole way through.
I agree.
And it was very shocking. I almost find his death more shocking than the Alexa death. Because Lincoln's death, well, I don't know what I was going to say. I was going to say his was more like Tasha Yar in Star Trek, but I'm not sure if Alexa's departure was more Tasha Yar or Lincoln's. But it just seems very unexpected either way. Because you just think his character is going to be more important later or more useful later.
I agree.
They definitely seems like they just wrote him out. Because, yeah, I mean, because didn't he say basically that because he felt bullied or whatever, so he basically decided to walk himself out of the show?
I think from what he was saying, and I'm actually looking at the Entertainment Weekly article that talked about it. He said, basically, his quote is, "At the beginning of the season, Lincoln had a whole storyline that was cut, that was just non-existent. Rothenberg, who is the producer, abused his position to make my job untenable. What he did was disgusting, and he should be ashamed. He was professionally bullying me, cutting out all the storyline I was supposed to be doing, cutting lines, cutting everything out, trying to make my character and myself as insignificant as possible.
No, and yeah, true.
I did feel like in this season, I think we saw less of Lincoln than I would have expected to see.
He felt neutered, yeah.
Yeah, I will say I do agree with that. We just didn't see as much of him. You know, like I said, again, I'll be honest. I would have much rather seen more Lincoln on the screen than Pike. I mean, again, I understand Pike's position. You know, his character is supposed to push the story forward with the decisions he's making and how he's creating this war between the Tree Crew and the Sky Crew. But still, Lincoln, I think his character was more important to kind of bridge that divide. I just feel like there was so much more that his character should have been doing, especially once it came out that the warriors were slaughtered and that Bellamy took part of it. I mean, this is your girlfriend's brother, and they almost had no interaction for the after effect. And I just really felt like his character, it was almost like, and not only him, but just even for the last few episodes up until last week's episode, I was trying to figure out where the hell is Abby in all this. Like, there are certain characters that you would think are crucial to the storyline of what's happening, and they just all but have disappeared from the screen. So I don't know what that's about. I think there was a lot of wasted opportunity there for him and for his character. And he is one of the reasons why his storyline was one of the reasons why I did like the show. And I don't know. I just think that was a lost opportunity with that character and what that character could have.
Well, my only other point too is my original point was just saying, yeah, I know the way the story goes, the producer made it untenable for him, the actor, basically. But I was saying it seems like though, so yes, the producer did that. So then the actor decided, all right, well then good, I walk then, rather than you're fired. That was my first point. But then my second point is, for whatever reason, they may have had animosity with each other, the actor and the producer. It just makes you wonder, though, what the producer might be like just in general as a showrunner and how that may or may not affect the show going forward, or how maybe it's already affected the show before, we just didn't know it. I mean, because it makes you wonder what the producer's style is and how they choose to move the story and focus on certain things or not. And then, like, going back to the Alexa death, okay, so, like, the story there behind the scenes is that because the actress, you know, needs to devote more time to Fear the Walking Dead, you know, she has to focus on that. Okay, so, you know, she's going to focus on that, so we'll write her out of this show. Okay, fine. So then let's just say, you know, okay, we're going to use her for 6 more episodes, let's just say. So then it's your plan. You know you only have 6 episodes for her. So then you throw in this like pseudo relationship jag because you know she's going to probably, you know, she's leaving. So for you to decide to take that direction in the story, knowing that, see, that's basically, you know you're doing it for like sensationalism, you know? And see, that to me, I think about that and think, is that a good decision? Is that fair to the audience? Like, to use that type of storyline just to add some fireworks because, you know, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess I'm one of the people, I looked at Lex's death in a different light because I didn't even, the fact that she and Clark had consummated their relationship right before wasn't even a factor for me in processing her death. I just kind of looked at it storyline wise as, you know, the what was the guy named, the Flame Keeper, I can't remember his name, but the fact that throughout this whole time he has been telling Clark that her relationship with Lexa was putting Lexa in danger. It wasn't good for her. You're causing her to make wrong decisions. Your relationship with her is going to kill her. And then turns out it was his animosity towards Clark, which actually killed her when he started shooting all over the place. I guess I never looked at it any deeper than what it was on screen. So I didn't, when I started hearing about all the outrage and stuff, it's like at that point I kind of understood, oh yeah, I guess it can look that way. But I didn't take it that way when I first saw it on screen. I just really looked at it as, okay, you keep saying that she's a threat, but really you were the one who ended her life because of your, you know, vendetta or animosity or irresponsibility. That's just how I looked at it. So
I mean, I think it's a great way to look at it, but see, even though I'm not as outraged about her as the rest of the fans, I do see their point, meaning the outraged fans, meaning like that is like straight up manipulation by the producer. And like, I recognize that. And so that's why a lot of the outrage makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. I guess I'm just not as vested in the show as those other fans are. Has Kat passed out on the podcast?
No, I'm here. We've talked it to death. I agree with Hanako about, I didn't really get the fan outrage either until I read about it.
I got it,
but I wasn't as upset. You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. I didn't care.
I'm not that upset either. And I also thought it was strange that she was going to continue to play such a prominent role on both shows. I already thought that before this all happened. So yes, it makes sense to me that they need to get rid of her or get her out of the show. But I just was surprised that they would do it in such a dramatic fashion. Or I was surprised, if that's the situation, I was surprised why they wouldn't kind of put her on the back burner. You know, when you see a character out, but they could always come back. Yeah. And by the way,
that wouldn't have worked because of the fact that they are heading towards war. How can you head towards building this storyline about these two clans going to war and then sending the leader of one clan into the background? That just wouldn't work.
I could think of some ways, but actually, rather than me make up my own ways, it reminds me of something else that may or may not bother me in the future in this show. And that is because actually now they have made a backdoor way for characters to survive indefinitely. And Alexa is included in that. So actually, she actually could come back like next season if she gets killed off the walking.
Wait, so you're talking about in the dreamland or the AI land?
Yes.
You know, like, what? That's gonna exhaust me.
Because that's why I was like, oh, here we go. When they pulled that chip out of the back of her neck.
Yeah, the AI,
Yeah, because it's, again, I love Transformers, the original. And it's very much like the Matrix of leadership in the old Transformer cartoon that every leader.
You're saying that
Autobots,
like we've watched and you know we haven't, so.
I know, I know exactly what I'm talking about. And like the leader always carries the Matrix and it like, you know what it's like? It's just like the symbiotes with the Trills in DS9. It's exactly like that.
Where it carries the memories of
the old versions always still live on because that thing goes from leader to leader. And that's the same thing with the chip, and then we have this whole AI business. And basically on the show, if you ever take in one of those communion wafers, apparently you can live on in the AI world extent. So like in that respect, almost no one ever really dies. So actually, they do have a way to bring some people back later.
I would prefer them to bring her back and cure her off of fear, because I really don't like
I agree with you. I was going to say that, Hanako.
The Walking Dead, her character annoys me too.
She doesn't do anything.
But on the 100, Lexa was a strong character. She was very, you know, she was kind of ruthless and cutthroat, but she also had compassion and a heart. So I like that about her character on The 100. And I think that probably upset me more as far as the character's death than, you know, the other circumstances that people are upset about, because she was one of the stronger characters on the show. She was one of the characters. She is one of the characters on the show whose motivations actually make sense to me as far as the decisions she makes and what she does. Her character makes so much more sense. Her as Alicia on Fear the Walking Dead, she gets on my nerves. Mm-hmm. I really hope that her character has matured and changed a little bit, because on that show, she got on my nerves so bad last season.
Oh, and okay. I want to say about that just quickly, because I feel like we're going real long now on this topic. I mean, the show itself. But
you're telling me.
While I agree her character on The 100 is so much, if we only compare just her character to her other character, yes, I agree. Her character in The 100 is much better, much stronger. And yes, I completely understand anyone being annoyed by her character on Fear. But my only hope is that her character on Fear will develop more in the future, because she is secretly one of my favorite on that show. And I hope she will change and evolve going forward to that show. And I hope she has a long stay on that show, because I'd rather her develop into a more interesting character on what I think will at the end be a better show, rather than be a really strong character on this very questionable show. So in that respect, I have hopes.
Was the one to me, like, it was her and Lincoln that made the show. In fact, it wasn't until I like looked her up that I realized she's so different in The 100 that I didn't even realize it was the same chick from Fear.
And one of the reasons why I didn't like Alexa right out the gate when she came onto the 100, because actually I was a big fan of the female leader of the Grounders before her.
Yeah.
And when they killed her off, I was actually bothered back then. And then I'm like, well, really? So we can just bring in this Alexa character? So, you know, I didn't actually like her initially, like, you know, she grew on me later. And then I don't want to get into spoilers for other CW shows and things right now that maybe you guys or others haven't seen yet.
Yeah, but, don't, because I haven't.
But with other shows, I won't necessarily. Is this like the trend now to start killing characters? Because we're talking about the
100. I don't know.
It's happening on other prominent shows right now. And a lot of these other shows, it's a little bit confusing the same way as it is in The 100. And I'm wondering, is this because in a weird way some shows are trying to copy Game of Thrones and The Walking Dead? Because I don't want to spoil other people's other shows, but there's a lot of characters getting killed right now all over the place.
I get what you're saying, because I said the same thing earlier this week. I don't watch Arrow on a regular basis.
Stop talking. I don't know who died. I don't know who died.
And then, of course, you know, the 100, and then we know somebody died in Walking Dead. We just don't know who yet. And it's like, can you guys please give us a reprieve? Like, Game of Thrones is coming on in 2 weeks. We are going to see Dips. Yeah, please give me a break.
It's one of my favorite shows that apparently nobody else watches is The Americans. And I was watching the latest episode earlier today. And again,
I heard.
No watches that show, but it was one of the most shocking deaths I've ever seen in a show that I'm a fan of. Shocking in the way that completely did not see that coming, type of shocking. Like in the way I was shocked when Beth was killed on The Walking Dead.
Yes.
And this show, The Americans, that nobody watches, I freaking love it. It blew me. This came out of nowhere. So I'm like, is this what everyone's doing? Is this the new world we live in?
Yeah, because even on, and I know nobody else on the show watches, Vampire Diaries had 2 deaths last week.
Wow.
So, yeah. And it was just kind of like, wait, why is everybody dying? Like, is this supposed to be the new trend in season finales or close to season finales? Or I don't know. I need them to give it a break, though.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Woo. Yeah. I don't know. I think we scratched the surface of what happen on the 100. I mean, because we pretty much tried to talk about
I'm just curious about fan react, meaning podcast listeners. Because it seems like people who have never watched this show, if they listen to this podcast, they're not going to ever watch this show. And then people who have already watched it or maybe fans of it, I feel like they may be mad at two or three of us on this podcast for whatever different reasons. So I feel like we may be pleasing no one right now.
Well, I mean, but maybe there's like somebody out there who feels the exact same way. Like, what the hell is this? It's, you can't turn it off. You can't hate it really. It's just so weird. It's a sci-fi purgatory show.
I agree 1,000%. In a weird way, this has actually made Heroes look better in a way. Because
Stop talking about Heroes.
No, because Heroes... It makes Heroes look better because at least Heroes made it easy for me to hate it 100% across the board and be done with it now. But because the 100, it pulls you back in. This is the worst drug, everybody. Just understand that.
Yeah,
this
it is. The it's worst the drug. All your teeth heroin. Are going to
fall out if you start watching the 100.
It is the heroin.
Oh, stop.
Just saying. It's the worst. Because you find yourself using and abusing the drug, even though it's not even giving you any good feelings at all anymore.
It does nothing. Oh my God. So do we want to put ourselves out of the torture and end it, or how do we want to? Because we've talked an hour and 30 minutes on this.
Really?
Yes.
And
wow.
Yeah. No, I know I've been watching the clock, but as sad as this is, I don't see myself stopping anytime soon. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And what's even more shocking is that actually, whatever I feel, whatever I've said about the 100, this isn't even the number one CW show that's offending me right now or bothering me. Like, can you believe that? This is not even the number one most troubling
show right now. That is surprising.
Show is Arrow. That is the most troubling show on that
network. Oh, I'm not caught up. And so it's like a chunk that's not anywhere available. So it's preventing me from catching all the way up. So I'll get caught
you
up on that one.
That in cat or listeners, the 100 is not even the number one show bothering me on the CW network.
What show was Kat talking about? She's not caught up?
On Arrow.
Arrow.
Oh, okay.
So don't tell me who died. I know there was a big death. I think I know who it is because he's of a certain color. So but I don't...
It's not even about a character going away on that show. Just in general, if we ever do an up-to-date focus on Arrow...
We will.
Like, just everyone, if you hated this episode of Sci-Fi Project, don't listen to that episode because... I'm going to have much more bile whenever we get to current Arrow goings on. That show. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, okay. Well, I think we're going to end on a downer. But guess what? We're going to come back. We're going to cover the season finale of The 100. And that's going to be exciting.
Gosh.
Yeah. So we're going to... In this sci-fi party line.
Everybody just watch your home copy of The Force Awakens, which is what I'm going to do after we get off this.
Yeah. Wait, what? Oh, that's out. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's...
Hey, I got stuff to do in the morning. I don't know. Okay, all right. Well, so that's our show, guys. We really want your feedback on this. give us a call. Voicemail 773-336-2686. Go to our website. You can leave us a comment there. We are all on all of the, social networks, and that's Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and you can find us just by Googling Sci-Fi Party Line. We thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you at the party next time. Bye.
End of line.